KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Ayo, it's 406, 84 degrees. How you doing, Mike?
Well, and at 84 degrees, I'm doing great.
Yeah, that's about your temperature there.
That's my limit. That's my absolute limit.
Well, you're going to love the rest of the forecast then.
I mean, anything after 85, I start going downhill quick.
Yeah, it's funny how we do that as we grow older.
Yeah, I know. It's just sucks all the energy,
right out of you.
Right out of my brain, you know. Oh, man. I'm glad we don't do this program at 6.
Yeah, or in Los Angeles.
Oh, God. What's happened in L.A.?
Oh, it's hotter than you know what.
Oh, well, okay. Floods in Texas, hot and, well, yeah. And that's one of the topics I'm going to talk about. I'm going to start with the fires in California here. And I know that's not a homeowner landscape thing, but it's a bigger landscape thing. And I got some observations. But anyway, thank you for listening today. I hope you enjoy the show. And if you have any questions, we're going to answer those questions for you. And the number you would call would be 673-4464, 673-4464. And the purpose of this show is education. Hey, learn new things. Learn about your landscape. Learn how to fix it. Learn how to do it. Learn what to fertilize with and how to water and all the other hundreds and hundreds of things that we talk about over the years. So I'm going to speak about two topics today. One is a large topic and has to do with fires and forests and things like that. And when I get through with that portion of it, I will skip to the landscapes kind of thing in the lawns and that kind of I'll go that angle for a while and talk about what we can do and how we can do it and how to get rid of some weeds and things. But at any rate, this past weekend, my wife and I drove to Reno to visit family. That's where all her family lives. It's an annual trip. And our route is like I-5 to Mount Shasta and then over the mountains to Susanville, California, and then a shot down to Reno. That's about the fastest way you can get there. And I heard about all the California fires, and one of my guys is a firefighter, so he left me, a week ago and went to Redding. And I'll tell you what, I feel sorry for him. He's in the middle of it. But when I heard about the California fires, I was, interested in all that. But when I went through that area, I was dismayed by what I saw. You know, the smoke was thick and gray with burnt areas right up to the edge of the highway. Now, this is after you turn off I-5 and head east, southeast through McLeod and Burney, and then you get to Susanville in about 2.5 hours or so. And the smoke was so thick and gray with burnt areas, like I say, right up to the edge of the highway. Both sides of the highway, they were burnt right up to the edges. And it wasn't continued, but it was spots all the way along for, the 100 miles or whatever that is there that you have to travel. And the worst burns were in areas where no logging or no thinning has been done. Now, there was the least amount of damage was in areas that had been thinned or logged. And when we approached Susanville area, there's a big, you're coming up, you're pretty high up over the valley there, and you look down into the valley. The smoke was like dark brown in the sky. I mean, it was just brown, and you couldn't see the mountains, for crying out loud, and they're only a few miles away. That's how thick this stuff was. Jeez. And there was ash floating out of the sky and hitting on the windshield. Big chunks of ash. So some of it was dark, some of it was light, and it stayed that way for the next 83 miles to Reno. And it just got worse, and it was amazing how dark the sky was. Everybody had their headlights on, both both lines of traffic going both ways. And it was, and you could actually taste the smoke. Oh. You know, I don't know. That's how thick it was. You could taste the just a weird taste.
And couldn't be healthy.
No, it's not healthy. And of course, you try to drink some water to kind of rinse that out. It doesn't work.
No.
After I went through that, I thought, well, of one of my points that I used to talk about when I was county commissioner is, you know, that clear cuts do prevent forest fires. I mean, that's all there is to it. In Alaska, clear cuts are done in heavy timbered areas and they're used as fire breaks. And I've seen photos of where you'll have some heavy timber and a huge meadow, maybe a half a mile wide, a quarter to a half a mile wide, and maybe three quarters of a mile long in certain areas, and they build those and they clear cut those on purpose so that when fire starts on one side of that area, it doesn't jump immediately to the other side because
there's nothing there.
There's nothing there but grass and wildflowers and things like that, which would be easily controlled. And I think that's a great idea. And why we don't do it around in this country, I have no idea. And I don't know why they don't do it in the places that were burning down there in that area. But logging and thinning, and I might irritate some people, but that's okay. I'm going to say it anyway. Logging and thinning are good forest management tools. And fires will still occur, but they're going to be a lot smaller. And the cost of fire suppression would be a whole lot less costly, and the revenue that could be used to fund county and state coffers for education and medical and whatever, you know, when timber is harvested, instead of destroying all that ground and all that wood by fire. You know, I don't know why this concept is so hard for governments to grasp. Or people who are, you know, I know that private timber companies understand this principle, you know, because billions of dollars is lost by fire, not counting the homes and the lives and the livestock and wild animals and all that that's crushed by these kinds of things. And it's just amazing because we have so many billions of board feet of timber out there, and when the timber industry was really strong around here, we didn't have a whole lot of financial situations like closing libraries or closing schools or closing this and closing that and cutting back on lots of things that we had been enjoying all those years when we were doing logging, and not counting the loss of jobs and the loss of people who have moved away to find other jobs, those kinds of things. But this, you know, leads me also into another point for homeowners in like rural areas as well as city dwellers. But the rural area homes, you know, the guy that has 5 or 10 acres or more, and they're surrounded by timber or oaks or, you know, fields and that kind of stuff. And when you're landscaping, when you're thinking about landscaping, keep in mind the types of trees and shrubs that are planted close to your home or your shop or your barn or your fence line. You know, if you live in a rural area, you need to think about creating a fire break around your property, around your home at least, and, you know, mow the grass while it's green and keep it low. And I saw on the front page, or it's the second page, a guy was mowing at the high school yesterday.
Yeah.
And just mowing an athletic field, and it caught on fire from a mower. Well, you can't mow this time of year, for crying out loud. It just won't work. It's, you know, one spark or one hot muffler, you know, in those mowers,
sure.
They get their mufflers get really hot really quick because of the, you know, the way they're manufactured.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's all it took. And there you got the fireman over there putting it out, and I saw the picture of the mower. It was demolished. It was almost melted.
It's destroyed.
Destroyed, absolutely. Yeah. And then in the next picture, there was down at Powell Motors, and there was somebody burning weeds with a blowtorch.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and it was smoke, and so the fire.
I didn't see that one.
Well, yeah, it's in today's paper. Yeah. And so the fire crew went over to, they thought it was a car fire because of the smoke and stuff.
Yeah.
But some person, I won't say what I'm thinking, some person thought they would remove weeds with a blowtorch.
Oh,
and that grass is irrigated, but there are still some brown spots and dry spots in it. But it's a lawn. That's all it is a lawn. And it's right there. There's Stephen Street and a sidewalk, and there's all these used cars in the parking lot sitting right next to it. I mean, had that gotten away, and it could have blown up the whole place. You would have had a I don't know.
So much for Southeast Stevens.
Yeah, so much. So much for Southeast Stevens. So when you're mowing the grass, don't do it now. Leave it alone, for crittin' sakes. You know, wait till it rains an inch or two, and then go ahead and tackle it. It may look ugly. It may look unsightly. But for crying out loud, you don't want to mow it. Yeah, I mean, you could go out there with a pair of scissors, I guess, or hand loppers and do something to it. But geez Louise. Common sense has to play a big part in this, folks.
Is there any common sense?
I hope so. I saw some down the street.
Did you?
Yeah, there was hitchhiking out of the town. But, for instance, you know, trees close to the house, remove those trees that hang over your roof. Remove the brush, like, that is within 50 to 100 feet of any structure, you know, and you're not going to do it now, obviously, but as soon as it gets cool enough and wet enough, get out there and knock it down. And next spring, prior to it getting hot, like in June or even July, in June is probably fairly safe, provided we get sufficient rain in the spring.
Right.
And knock that stuff down. Get it cut short so that you don't have a potential catastrophe sitting there in your front yard. And if you have timber, manage it in a way that fire won't destroy it. You know, manage it. Actually thin it, clean it. You know, make sure that if fire were to start, it would stay low and not get into a crown fire. A crown fire is up in the tops of the trees, and that's the hottest, worst, creates its own wind, and goes through like a freight train. Yeah. And I've done considerable cleanup around my home, but as I look around, I still see more that I should do, and I'm just waiting. When it gets cooler, when it gets wetter, I'm going to go up and, you know, do some more work. And in the wintertime, I have more time to do that kind of stuff. It's cold, it's wet, and it's soggy, but it's okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've logged my property three different times since 1994. And you can't even tell it's been logged. It was basically thinned. Mm. But in the thinning process, not only did I reap the benefits of the dollars of the timber that I took out, I also opened up the stand a bit so that hopefully that would prevent any kind of tragedy that from somebody going by throwing a cigarette butt out or some muffler burning off or, you know, that kind of thing.
Some kind of weird stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I have several small roads. My property is pretty hilly. And so I've built several small roads up my different watersheds and hills as fire breaks and for access if it's needed. So, you know, it's I got a four-wheeler, one of those Kubota, what do they call them? Kubota quads or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I run my dog up there every night when I get home, and my roads are passable. I've cut the brush back. I don't have any brush growing in the roads. I sprayed them in the spring and killed all the grass that was coming up. I even mowed them. Then I took a cat down through there, smoothed them out again. Then I take my tractor after that and really smooth it. So it's, and it's probably, oh, good 12 feet wide. That would help not only for access to get a truck up there with fire
equipment.
Tools and equipment and water, but it gives you a little bit of protection.
Mm-hmm.
Not much if it's a big gigantic fire, but it's at least a start. So look at your land with a critical eye for fire and make your property a safer and more beautiful place to live. And like I say, I know this is a different topic for a landscaping show, but seeing the destruction this past weekend, I felt compelled to share my thoughts and concerns. And you know, and another thing too, and if you got a big yard and you're living in a rural area, and it wouldn't hurt to be in a, you know, even in town, have extra water faucets set around in your yard with a good hose coiled up and ready to go in case something something happens. You know, be prepared. Yeah. So we got a break, I'm sure.
We got a break and a phone call. So we'll be right back.
Hope it's a good one.
Yeah, hang in there, phone caller. We'll be back in a couple of minutes to take your phone call for Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Yes, he says. All right, let's go directly to our phone call this afternoon. Hi there, you're on the air with Mike Winters. Thanks for holding.
Hi, Mike. Yeah, we've had a fire out here at Iverson Park just up the road from us, and we saw the helicopter going over with the bucket and the fire truck, so I hope that's out by now. Anyway, my question is, I have a lot of clematis plants on my property, okay? And I have three of them for some reason, and they've been planted next to others. So it's not like they're off by themselves in some weird spot and don't get the same water and the same fertilizer, blah, blah, blah. But three of them, and they're all different types, have for some reason in the last couple of weeks just gone totally, they already bloomed and they just went totally brown. And now one is coming back from the root and has come back about maybe a foot high. The other two are still just looking absolutely dead. And I know they'll probably come back, but what caused that in three different locations? And they have other things around them that weren't affected.
How often are they watered?
Oh, they're watered every 3 days, every third day.
Well, have you ever kind of dug your hand around in the soil to actually feel the moisture and see how wet they actually were?
Oh, yeah, and like I said, this one especially is in a group of about four others.
Uh-huh.
All the others are fine.
Huh.
That one just died back. I mean, it just went. It had already bloomed lots of blossoms earlier this spring and just went, all the leaves went brown. And there's three of them in three different places, and like I said, they're next to other clematis and other things, and I always give them something to cover their roots, like a fern or a whatever, daylily, something that gives them shade because they don't like their roots hot. Mm-hmm. And they're with other sets of clematis. And so that's what's so unusual to me is, well, why would that one look like that? All the other five in a row there are just fine.
Well, how long have they been in the ground?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I name them. Edith's been there for like 3 years.
Edith, huh?
Yeah, Edith.
Yeah. Well, what I would do, and I've experienced that before, and I had one client that I planted clematis for, and all of them kind of went how you're describing, and they turned brown, and I couldn't figure it out. So I told my client, I'm going to cut them to the ground and see what happens. Well, I cut them to the ground, and they came back gangbusters, and they came back beautifully, and I told them to kind of hold off on the water a little bit. And they were on the east side, so they got morning sun, afternoon shade, which is kind of a perfect situation for them. But when they came back, the roots were great. And for some reason, like you described, the leaves were brown and crispy and falling off. And so we just kept the water away from them for a week or so and cut them to the ground, and then they just regenerated. So that's something you might try. Why it happens, I'm not, you know, I couldn't really tell you unless I was standing there looking at them and doing some you know, digging around myself. But that seems to help them, and I don't know why, but sometimes they just get a little too much of something, maybe it's water, maybe it's sun, maybe it's bugs, maybe it's a fungus, but the roots are still alive. I'll bet you $10 the roots are still alive, and if you get rid of all the dead stuff, because it won't regenerate the stems, it won't regenerate the leaves on a larger plant, but it'll come back brand new.
Okay, I'll go try it next time I'm out there.
Well, and if it works, call back and let me know, okay?
I will.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All righty. Might have learned something there.
Well, yeah. You know, I did that for a client one time when she had, I think, four or five clematis that she wanted on the side of her office building. Mm-hmm. And I put them in, and they were great. They were 1 gallon size, about, you know, maybe 2 feet tall, and they were doing fairly well. And I think from her position, it was an overwatering kind of thing. And I said, hey, quit watering them for a while, and yeah, I'm gonna cut them down and see what's happening. And they'd been in the ground for a couple of months, and they had bloomed, and then after they bloomed, they kind of took this hit, and just all the leaves turned brown, and the stems were dying, and when the stems are dying, and when the veins within the stems collapse, they can't bring up any water, they can't bring up any nutrition to the leaves, so therefore
kind
they're not
suffocating.
Right, they're not going to regenerate themselves. Yeah. So your best bet is, Jay, cut them down. I cut them right to the ground. And within a week, there was new growth. Within a month, they were 3 feet tall again.
Nice.
So that's the experience with clematis that I've had.
Yeah. Well, nice.
Yeah.
Well,
so, what?
No.
Oh, okay. All right, I'm going to switch now to, you know, after I got done with my lecture on timber and thinning and logging, I'm going to go to residential landscaping again.
Well, while you were in Reno, did you do any gambling?
No. You know, my brother-in-law took me on a ride around Reno, and they live actually in Sparks, about 6-7 miles out of downtown.
Yeah.
But we had to run some errands, so I went with him. And we went right downtown Reno, and I saw two people on the sidewalk walking. That's it.
Wow.
There was no traffic to speak of, a couple of cars. Usually you can't hardly get down those streets,
right,
because it's,
yeah,
and the people are just bunched up together. There was nothing. It was like a ghost town. And then we got through the downtown area, and we headed north on Virginia Street, which is the main drag through the middle of town.
Mm-hmm.
And they had revitalized Virginia. Now there's a couple of casinos down there, but not like downtown. But they're mainly small businesses and coffee shops and, you know, get your car cleaned, dry cleaners, all that kind of stuff, shops. And that place was bustling. There were people all over the place. You know, walking the streets, drinking coffee and eating lunches and shopping. And I thought, well, that's a strange thing.
Usually just the opposite.
Just the opposite. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so we went down through that part of town, and I thought, man. And then we went back through downtown again. It was just empty. Nothing happening.
That's an odd thing to see.
Yeah. The
parking
lots were empty. Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, I had never seen it that way. Okay. Now, the subject I was going to talk about here, a couple of them here. Do you have, for instance, poison oak, a poison oak grove on your property, or you might have a blackberry orchard coming up along your fence, and you cut them or even sprayed them, and they still persisted. What the heck do you do to this stuff?
Burn them.
Yeah, that's one way, but not right now.
No.
And the only way, and I know, to eliminate them is spraying with Crossbow. And I know there's a big deal about sprays and all that kind of stuff. But Crossbow actually works on poison oak and blackberries. It actually kills them. And what happens is you spray them when the leaves are on, and then the crossbow goes down into the root system and kills the plant from the roots up. And it takes a while. It's not a quick kill or anything like that. But it's more permanent than trying to cut them down every year and spraying them with soap and water or something
they
like
that.
They
seem to like that.
Yeah, they do. And, if you continue with your crossbow program at least once every year, usually in July or August for best results, and if you really are ambitious, I would spray every time I saw a new growth popping out, and then eventually you get them all. Because one thing about blackberries, they got a very massive root system.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's amazing.
Yes.
And you can cut them to the ground and come back in a week and they're already a foot tall. That's how they operate.
Yep.
And they grow faster. And it's like the clematis I was talking about. At any rate, if you stay on top of the situation, and on top of it means have crossbow on hand, because that seems the only thing that really deters it. And when you see any new shoots, get out there and give it a shot. It's now poison oak is not as vociferous as blackberries. I mean, it grows and it can grow wild and it can grow fast and grow up trees and fences. But
did I just hear the word vociferous?
Yeah, vociferous.
I think you need to define that.
Well, it means very rapidly growing, unmanageable, vociferous, kind of like you, Kyle.
Yeah, I was going to say.
For interrupting my program. Oh, golly. I'm going to fire him. Oh, geez. But, both of these great plants are hard to kill. And unfortunately, deer won't eat them like they eat your landscape plants in your yard. That's a shame. Because
they don't like those.
They're so plentiful, you think the deer would just attack them and have a heyday on them, but they don't. But if you do cut them down and leave a few, leave about a foot of growth on the stem with a couple of leaves on them and then spray them, use less spray, but you're not going to get the biggest bang for the buck, but it's easier to do that way. Crossbow will go into the leaves and into the stems and then goes down into the root system and kills the roots. On blackberries, the reason you've got to stay on top of them because of that root system. It's so massive, you might kill everything on top, but that root system is so massive that one root's still alive for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah.
And it pops up a new branch, pops up a new bud, and continues to go.
Start all over again.
Exactly. And if, like I say, one root's still alive, watch out. It's going to come to life the following spring. And if it does, nail it again early spring. Don't wait till July or August. But usually I spray in July or August or even September because it seems like you get a better kill back in the fall. I don't know why, but it seems that way. But be persistent. Don't quit. And you can win over these two wonderful plants. Now, poison oak. It likes to climb up trees or poles, and kind of wraps around a tree. You go out, I got to go down my field, and there's some Douglas fir down there along the creek, and there's a poison oak, and it's crawling up a tree, and it winds itself up around the tree. Now, you can try to cut it, but you can cut it with some big loppers and stuff. But you can't pull it out of the tree because it's intertwined with a bunch of branches and everything else. Mm-hmm. So
it's got its clamps on.
Yeah, it I think that it has some kind of a root system that actually tries to root through the bark of a tree and get into the food system and the transportation system of the food in the tree and keeps it alive. I mean, it's amazing stuff. But what I've learned to do, and I tried it on some smaller trees because I didn't want to destroy any large trees, I just sprayed as far as I could reach up. I sprayed all the leaves on the poison oak as they were wound around the tree. And within a month, they were all dead. And they've stayed pretty dead. And I sprayed all the way down, say from about 8, 7-8 feet in the tree, and just because some of the vines were, 20 feet up into the tree.
You know,
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I just sprayed 7 or 8 feet around, and I just sprayed all the way around the tree, all the leaves I could get. And I only did a couple at first because I didn't know if it would hurt the tree and I didn't want to kill the tree. But it worked. The tree was not hurt. The trees are still alive, and I did that, 10 years ago, something like that. And the poison oak hasn't come back in those areas either.
Oh,
so, but wow. I've got plenty of it along the roadway and stuff like that that I need to kill.
Took its place, or
yeah, it takes its place very quick. But I've had the best success with the crossbow, and you just have to be thorough, and you got to repeat if it's needed. Don't say, that's good enough. There's only one little branch left. Get that little branch, because that little branch will take over and turn into a tree itself. And it's
miserable stuff.
It's miserable stuff. Absolutely miserable stuff. Now, spraying for weeds in your lawn is a whole different ball game. It's a whole different deal.
Can we find out after the break?
We can.
All right.
We can.
Hang in there with us. Be right back. We'll be spraying weeds in your yard next.
Lawn.
Lawn. On the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. There we go. On News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hello there, we're back with Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio 1240 KQEN. And we're just touching on a new subject.
Yeah, we're talking about, it doesn't sound like I'm on, there we go, there we go.
Had you down a little bit.
Huh? You cut me off, man.
No.
Anyway, I was talking about getting rid of poison oak, blackberries, that kind of thing, and what to do. And then I was going to jump into the weeds in your lawn and the weeds in your flower beds. And this is a good time to take care of that stuff. And if you have a question, it's 673-4464. It's okay to interrupt my train of thought. I can find it because I got pages of notes. Don't worry. I couldn't remember any of this, but that's why I kept pages of notes. But, there are numerous weed killers on the market claiming all sorts of things. And so if you go to one of the box stores, whatever it is you like to go to, and you're looking for a weed killer, read the labels and the directions several times to make sure you understand how much to use and when to use it, what it'll kill, how dangerous it is, and before you even buy it, just find out. And if they don't have that information visible to you, ask somebody in the store, hey, what does this actually do? Get somebody who actually knows something and can tell you about it. But if weeds in a plant bed are fairly easy, let's say you've got, it doesn't matter, rhododendrons or rose bushes or azaleas, and they're pretty well spread apart, but you can spray Roundup safely in between these kinds of things, and you don't hurt your plants. As long as you are careful and don't pump up the pressure to shoot 20 feet or something like that. But you want a fine little spray directed very close to the plant, and put that nozzle down, you know, 2 or 3 inches from the plant, and just give it a couple shots. Just, you don't have to saturate it. Just a couple of shots will work. And you can get in between all your rhodies or your roses or azaleas or whatever you might have in there. It just don't get any on your nice landscape plants. And the same way around any trees. And you can even use it in vegetable gardens if you're very, very careful. And keep all that stuff to a minimum. And it won't affect your plants. It won't hurt them. It's okay. And I use Roundup because it actually works, and I've used it for 40 plus years, and I still have all my arms and legs and eyes, and I think my brain works too.
And they're still making it.
And I'm still making it, so yeah. I don't believe the commercials that come on that you got to sue Monsanto Company for $1 billion and because you whatever. But at any rate.
Yeah, we can't say anything.
I know. So, but there's some alternatives that we can explore. There's some folks don't like spray. Okay, well, yeah. Hey, I got some alternatives for you. Number one on the list is boiled water. It works great on
really?
Boiling water. You heat it up on the stove and very carefully take it out and pour it right on those little weeds, and it cooks them on the spot, kills them instantly. You just pour it carefully right into the center of the weed, slowly so it doesn't run all over the place. And that water penetrates, into the soil, into the roots, but it does super duper damage real
quick.
Burns them up, exactly.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so boiled water, that's a good one.
It's cheap.
Another one is rubbing alcohol. You can get a little hand sprayer, one of the little, like a quart bottle or a pint bottle with the little hand spray thing. And you just walk around with your little spray bottle and smoke the little boogers. I'll tell you what, it works very quickly with the rubbing alcohol. And, the weeds don't even care because it's alcohol. And just get sprayed and they think it's cool and then they die.
They've gone to flower heaven.
Yeah, they're going to weed heaven.
Weed heaven.
Yeah. And, and this one I really like is vinegar.
Okay.
Yeah, vinegar, it can either be cider or white vinegar. It kills weeds fast on a sunny day. If it's like today, it's sunny, yeah. It's warm. You spray them right into the center of the plant, and bingo, that plant is dead on contact almost. And because vinegar will kill just anything it touches, you don't want to get it on any of your good plants. You don't want to overspray or think that it's not going to. It'll kill your rhododendron. It'll kill your azalea. It'll kill your pansies. But it will knock those weeds out like almost instantaneously.
I'm writing this down.
Good.
I'm going to use this.
Okay, so that's two good ones. But whichever weed killer you choose, be it store-bought chemicals or the natural ones I just spoke about. Start with a small area, like of your lawn, and
test pattern.
Yeah, a test pattern. Just say, okay, I'm gonna try this out on that end of the lawn. I'm gonna take a 5-foot square area or something like that that's got a lot of weeds in it, and go ahead and test that and see what actually happens. And spray the weeds specifically. Don't overspray. Because there are sprays you can spray on the whole lawn, and it just supposedly kills the weeds. But I've seen it do damage to the lawn grasses as well.
How could it not?
Right. But after you've sprayed your small test area, you can see what the results are. In a couple of days this is happening, in a week this happens, and then within 10 days there are no weeds. The grasses are doing fine. You'll have some blank spots where the weeds were, but you can reseed them and put some grass seed back in there. And just figure it this way. If it works in the small area, then you can treat your entire lawn.
The larger
area. If you had success in that small area, just repeat that process, and it might be time consuming, but if you really don't like weeds in your lawn, that's one way to do it.
Yeah.
If you make a mistake on your small test area, it's easy to readjust and fix rather than to destroy your entire lawn.
Oh, wow.
And have to start over. But But you know, they're just natural fixes. There's one thing that a lot of folks make a mistake about with their lawns is don't mow your lawn too short. Let's say you got a brand new lawn and it's weed free, it's beautiful. Let's say it's sod, it was laid, and it's rooting out and it's growing. And especially this time of year when it's hot and every day.
Yeah.
And some people like to have a very short lawn. They think they need a golf course in their backyard or front yard.
Yeah.
Well, that's a different kind of grass on those golf courses than what you put in your lawn. They can take short mowing. The ones that we install in homes, they don't like the short mowing. So keep them a little bit longer, and you'll have less weeds. Mow high, and you'll have less weeds to worry about.
Where were you when my dad was around?
Well, he wasn't listening to the show.
No.
Yeah.
He certainly wasn't.
And then when you're fertilizing, and a consistent fertilizer is really going to help you, always fertilize with a high-quality fertilizer on a regular basis. Regular. Like, you don't eat once or twice a week. You eat every day, most folks. You know, I think maybe Kyle doesn't, but most folks do.
Yeah, you know, all that walking he's done.
I know, 70 miles this last week.
Yeah.
I don't walk 70 miles in 2 months, I don't think.
I know I don't.
Yeah, but on the fertilizing of the lawn, when I say regular basis, it's like every 2 months, you know, every 8 weeks, beginning in March and ending in October.
Mm-hmm.
And just skip July and August because it's too stinking hot.
Take a break.
And you can make a big mistake if you know, like it's July 15th and you fertilize and for some reason the sprinkler system doesn't come on, or if you're hand watering something happens, or it's not quite long enough watering time, you could burn the lawn up.
Mm.
And so I like to skip those 2 months. All the maintenance contracts that we do that have lawns, we skip July and August for the most part. Once in a while, if it's really bad, we do. But healthy grass naturally keeps weeds to a minimum.
Yep.
And that's why you mow, when you mow high, weeds cannot compete readily with high grass because the grass is vigorous, it's full, the lawn is full, and weeds for the most part only pop up where the grass is thin or there's a bare spot. And when there's a bare spot, that's when a weed pops up. So if you mow correctly, water correctly, and fertilize on a consistent basis, there's going to be an occasional weed, but it's not going to be a catastrophe where you have to start all over again.
So right.
We have a break.
You got it.
Hey, pretty good, huh?
Hey, we're almost into the home stretch here. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show continues after this.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
Hello there. We are back, and let's get right to the program with a phone call.
All right.
Good afternoon. You're on the air with Mike.
We're on the air?
You're on the air.
I didn't get the deal on cleaning up the lawn there, but I had to leave. But I used 2,4-D on the lawn. My wife says, hey, get rid of the crabgrass and get rid of the rest of the stuff. And the other question I have about an orchard, keep the weeds down and out in the orchard. What kind of herbicide do I use to keep the weeds out of the orchard, like under the filberts and stuff? How do I kill all that stuff so I can pick up the filberts?
Well, I would go with Roundup. It works. when it's good and dead, you can either till it in or mow it short, but don't mow it now. But Roundup works. I use that in my orchard. I use that between I've got trees growing out in my field at the nursery, and I use Roundup in between the trees once or twice a year just to keep the weeds to a minimum, and it works well.
Great. What else do I kill my crabgrass in the lawn around the edges?
Oh, crabgrass is a there. Like I said earlier, there's so many weed killers on the market. There's some that are specific for crabgrass, and right now I can't think of any of the names because of the how many there are. But if you went to the co-op, they have a right there, and it'll say specifically crabgrass killer, and supposedly it only kills the crabgrass and leaves the lawn alone.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. All righty.
So we were, I was talking about weeds in the lawn and an
yes.
appropriate phone call. And again, I want to reiterate on the mowing your lawn too
technique.
Short. It does several things. It hurts the grass, really, because the grass has to regenerate itself. It weakens the grass, and occasionally you get a bare spot in there, and that's when the weeds pop up. And it also, when the grass is, say, 3 inches tall, the ground is cooler, and there's more moisture in that lawn. Mm. When you cut it so short that the sun bakes it, that ground dries out fairly quickly, and that's the perfect setup for the weeds to begin, because the grass is weakened at that point, and the weeds can take over. They can germinate, and they're just waiting for the opportunity, especially, like I said earlier, if there are some bare spots. Weeds grow quickly in bare spots. They'll sit there forever, waiting to germinate, and then bingo, they get the opportunity.
Yeah.
And once they start, there's no stopping them. But when the grass is longer, it actually chokes out the weeds. It actually restores moisture to the soil and keeps your lawn a lot healthier and greener and looking good. Especially, like I said earlier, if you fertilize on a regular basis with a high quality fertilizer, not something on sale for $1.98 for 50 pounds. Don't, stay away from that, because it's no good. You're wasting your money. You're wasting your $1.98. So spend 12, 15, 20 bucks, whatever it is, and it'll go a long way. And just shop around. And again, I get a lot of material from the co-op, because there's some folks in there that can answer questions that have been there for a long time. They work with farmers, they work with ranchers, they work with homeowners. And Mark Christensen is a good guy for chemicals. And when I'm trying out a new chemical or a new fertilizer that I've heard advertised or seen advertised, I'll pop in and ask Mark, hey, is this stuff, what makes this stuff so great? Or why is everybody all of a sudden turning to it, just because it's a new product? Or does it actually work? And he can tell me the nuts and bolts of that particular product and say, yeah, that really worked. We tried it and it works, or we tried it and it's not working. So that's it.
He knows his stuff.
Are we done?
We are done already.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you learned something. I did.
Where are you located at, Mike?
We're on Highway 99 south of Winston, about a half a mile. Look for all the green roofs. And all of our roofs are green. And we're getting a new sign up there, so you can't miss it. It's really, really a nice place.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.